I'm Nadia Taylor, Training and Exercise Manager for the Readiness Support Center. And this is Semper Gumby, a podcast about emergency management in the Corps of Engineers. We'll cover topics about disaster response and recovery, FEMA mission assignments, and Corps-specific response authorities under which we operate for things like flood fighting and coastal emergencies. Today we're going to be talking about Public Law 8499, and we have with us Carl Pigott and Willem Helms. So Carl, what do you do for the Corps?
I'm on the emergency management staff at Mississippi Valley Division. I'm the PL 8499 program manager, and this is where we get our flood control and coastal emergency authorities.
And Willem, how about you?
Like Carl, I also work at a division level, and I actually work at the North Atlantic Division in Brooklyn, New York, and administer the Public Law 8499 program as well.
All right. Well, guys, thanks for being here. And I know some people might have turned off with public law and we've already started snoring, but this is actually a hugely important authority for the Corps. So tell me why, in a nutshell. Tell me, what is PL 8499?
Public Law 8499 is how the Congress expressed its intent for the federal government, principally the Corps of Engineers, to assist the nation in flood damage reduction in responding to coastal storms.
So what exactly does this public law give the Corps authority to do?
In a nutshell, it allows the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to prepare for natural disasters, accomplish response operations as a result of a natural disaster, and then post-event to actually repair and rehabilitate damaged flood and coastal storm risk management projects.
Okay, well, let's go through each one of those things kind of in detail and give some examples so people can make sure that they have an understanding. Let's start with disaster preparedness. What does that mean under PL 8499? What can we do specifically?
Under preparedness, we are directed, not merely allowed, but directed to organize, plan, train, exercise in order to be ready to execute any response disaster mission that may come up. In their foresight, Congress didn't just merely tell us it's okay if we do these things. They specifically direct that we organize, plan, prepare, train, so that when the time comes, the nation knows they can count on us being able to respond.
To some extent, we've taken that initial authority and really built a robust capability. So you'll notice across the United States, there are districts aligned, for example, with their respective states. We have divisions aligned with the respective FEMA regions. And then they are all essentially aligned for planning purposes to ensure that, you know, we indeed are prepared to respond to natural disasters.
Okay, so here at the Readiness Support Center, we, of course, do training and exercises, and that's all FCNCE, or Flood Control Coastal Emergency. That's kind of the lingo, funded. So that's how we are allowed to do a lot of things, then, is under this PL 8499. Is that a fair statement?
That is correct. All of our actions are documented in the engineer regulation that we have. I keep a hard copy as a ready reference that I can read back, read my handwritten notes, addendums as to which of these methods worked best, which is no longer applicable because of some other change. So we continually are updating, annotating the guidelines to keep them current. But the underlying authority, first, last, and always, is the public law intent of the Congress.
Yeah, and I, Carl, you bring up an excellent point, too, and Nadia, to some extent, the distinction. You know, so Public Law 8499, of course, is our authority to accomplish the mission, and the flood control and coastal emergencies, you know, is actually the appropriation to ensure that we receive the funding in order to accomplish the mission as outlined in Public Law 8499.
So what about stockpiling supplies, things like sandbags, the flood-fighting materials and products? Does that fall under this, under PL 8499 through disaster preparedness?
Stockpiling flood-fight materials in order to quickly and effectively respond is definitely a component of our preparedness. We maintain stockpiles strategically located across the divisions, across each district, whether at a field office, a supply depot. We try to put enough materials to initiate a flood fight as close to the likely location of the flood fight as we can. It allows us to respond more quickly and more efficiently. As we're in a recovery, if we start running low on particular materials, we can reach back to a regional flood fight materials center, or in the case of Mississippi Valley Division, to the National Flood Fight Materials Center in Rock Island. They maintain contracts in place with suppliers that can directly drop ship any of our flood fight materials anywhere in the contiguous United States within 48 hours. So we not only have our flood fight supplies strategically located, we have a pre-existing, very efficient means to restock those supplies as we expend them.
So that's disaster preparedness, but what about emergency operations under PLA 8499? What sort of activities fall under this category?
Carl brought up a good point, and that's how we prepare in terms of, you know, as simply as stockpiling supplies. However, another important part of the preparedness phase is that we also look to assess what the local capability is to accomplish their flood response operations. So during the preparedness phase, we're routinely accomplishing routine inspections and verifying, for example, is that local sponsor sufficiently prepared by stockpiling supplies themselves? And then we, through our discussions with the local sponsor, will ensure that we, in turn, can fulfill a gap if it's identified during the response operations.
If I might add just one thing, by specific intent, our allowed actions are to be supplemental to the local community, to the state agency, whatever. We are not supposed to be the agency of first recourse. We are supposed to supplement the local efforts, actions, supplies.
And when you say local sponsor, are you talking about a local government or like a levee owner or either?
So by local sponsor, that is indeed the agency that in fact is responsible for the operation and maintenance of that flood risk or coastal storm risk management project.
Okay.
So you'll commonly see that as levees, flood channels, engineered beaches along the Atlantic coast and to some extent along the Pacific coast as well.
So PL 8499 lets the Corps of Engineers supplement these local sponsors, local governments during a flood fight or a coastal emergency rather than, say, waiting for a FEMA mission assignment on the Stafford Act side.
It's clearly and distinctly separate. The flood control and coastal emergency is inherently a Corps of Engineers authority. The Stafford Act is how FEMA responds to a disaster. FEMA can task the Corps under the Stafford Act to provide assistance to them. We have to wait for their invitation to their party. Under flood control and coastal emergency, the Congress directly gave authority to the Corps, and we don't have to wait for anyone to start fulfilling our responsibilities. It is a much quicker, much tighter response, and truthfully, more often than not, we're responding before the event fully occurs.
Okay, thank you. That was the answer I was trying to get at.
Yeah, and so I think and that can go back to the emergency response operations question. So when it's known that a flood or coastal storm may indeed impact any part of the United States, we do have the authority, our own direct authority, to accomplish flood response operations. And so the way the process is initiated is, you know, again, these district emergency management organizations are constantly monitoring what those natural hazards may be. And if there is determined to be a significant threat from a flood or coastal storm, the district commander will in fact issue an emergency declaration to initiate our flood response operations under Public Law 8499 and begin to supplement local and state response efforts.
All right. Well, let's talk about rehabilitation under PL 8499. I think that's the next category that you guys mentioned. So tell me a little bit about that. What does that mean?
So after a flood or coastal storm has occurred, we do have the authority under Public Law 8499 to accomplish the repair and rehabilitation of eligible damaged flood risk or coastal storm risk management projects. So commonly what will happen post-event is that we'll send out teams to immediately assess the immediate effects from that flood or coastal storm, then begin to identify immediate repair requirements if necessary and accomplish accordingly. Or indeed, there may be a longer-term rehabilitation requirement of which we'll identify what that rough order of magnitude is and then begin a process to identify the most appropriate engineered solution, and that's commonly accomplished through a project information report. And the project information report will then recommend a repair solution and obviously the cost associated with that, and then assuming we have the funding available, we'll begin immediate repair of that project.
Carl, anything you wanted to add?
After the flood damage reduction feature is damaged, we have a standing authority to assist to rehabilitate the damaged works that are eligible, that meets the minimum criteria. It has to be feasible. The cost of the repairs compared to the benefits it will produce, you have to have a BC ratio greater than 1. They have to be active in the rehabilitation program. We have a wide variety of levee systems, from honestly levees little more than waist high to levees that are several stories tall. And we treat them all fairly, all the same. We repair them back to the original level of protection. We're not allowed to improve the local system under this program, but we can get them back to the conditions they were before. The only distinction, a federal levy, think of it as a levy that has a congressional authorization. We're allowed to repair them at 100% federal cost. The non-federal levees were originally constructed by a private party. They recognized the benefit of being a part of our rehabilitation and inspection program and have requested in writing to join the program. Following an inspection, if their levee system meets our minimum standards, we will incorporate them into the program and they would then be active and eligible for rehabilitation. The only distinction between the two is that the non-feds are required to put a small cost share up for their rehabilitations. No difference in standards, no difference in efforts, no difference in our commitment to them other than the small 20 cent on the dollar cost share.
So Carl's kind of elaborated on the damage to flood risk management projects, but we also have a fairly significant portfolio of coastal risk management projects. So again, those are the engineered beaches that you'll commonly see for us, at least primarily on the Atlantic coast. And the significant issue associated with the coastal storm risk management projects is once they're damaged, they are quite expensive to repair, but again, justified because they have such significant impacts to life and economic consequences.
Well, let's move to the next category, which I think is advanced measures. What does that mean, and what are some examples?
When there's known to be an imminent threat of an unusual situation, we do have the authority under Public Law 8499 to accomplish emergency measures to mitigate the impacts associated with that identified threat. In the field, you'll commonly see that implemented as temporary levees, check structures. Carl, do you have some examples?
The simplest to visualize is an unusually heavy snowpack built up across the winter. 300, 400, 500% of normal. You know at some point it is going to melt. This advanced measures authorities allows us to go out before it starts to melt to put in some protective measures in places where we know the runoff is going to be problematic. It allows us to step out before the event actually starts occurring. So it gives us a head start, if you will, on fighting the spring fight, even if we're at the end of winter, rather.
I do want to talk about flood fighting. I know we talked about it earlier, but since you mentioned it here during advanced measures, give me some examples of flood fight products and materials that we talked about earlier. So for people out there that don't know much beyond what a sandbag is, what are some different products that we use to flood fight?
Well, it's so you've identified some specific supplies that can obviously be utilized during a flood response operations, but I would also like to ensure we highlight our ability as the nation's engineers to provide technical assistance, again, when requested by local or state agencies. And so when we provide technical assistance, you'll commonly see our USACE volunteers out in the field working directly with, local agencies to provide the most appropriate engineered solution or emergency measure in response to the specific flood or coastal storm that may be impacting that area.
So what does that look like, though, for people who are trying to envision this?
Let me back up just a little bit. You asked about some of the different expedient flood fight materials. At the regional flood fight materials center, they stockpile the normal sandbags. They maintain a supply of the super sandbags, the 2,000-pound capacity sandbags. We're required to maintain a supply of port-a-dam and rapid deployable flood wall. We maintain rolls of polyethylene sheeting. Our material center and all of our districts maintain a small inventory of pumps. And we are allowed to loan out these pumps to the local sponsor to assist their flood fight efforts.
In response to the activities that we perform under flood response operations, I would like to highlight that we consider it in two forms of assistance. We have our technical assistance capability and we have our direct assistance capability. Our technical assistance capability is, we're relying on the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers as the nation's engineers to provide the appropriate technical or engineering assistance as we supplement local or state flood response operations. When we mention direct assistance, the criteria are a little higher before we can provide that type of assistance, but that will commonly include utilizing a contracting vehicle, for example. So we may, in fact, implement a contract to construct a temporary levee, for example.
You might need a short-term contract to move materials, sandbags, pumps, or whatever, from one location.
And a perfect example would be a direct contracting capability that we accomplished in the Bayou Chain project that occurred during the December 2015 flood event. And Carl, I believe you can provide some additional detail on that project.
That is truly one of my go-to examples of joint projects. In the situation that develops, you find water backing up Bayou Chain and flooding the small community from the backside of the protective works. So working with the state, the local levee board, and the small town, collectively we've developed a solution over the years. We actually sink a barge across the bayou. It's 8 or 10 feet.
And Carl, just to refresh, that is the Atchafalaya River Basin in southern Louisiana?
That is correct. The particular stream is Bayou Chain, and we essentially cut it off, preventing Gulf waters from backing into flooding the community with the sunken barge. The part that we played, once the locals had placed the barge, the Corps provided crushed stone to seal water flow at each end of the structure, something on the order of $800,000-$900,000 worth of crushed rock to seal the ends against water flow. And at the height of the event, I believe it was holding back 17, 18 inches from this small coastal community. And in that part of the world, with that flat topography, 16, 17 inches represents a lot of homes.
Yeah, and I always like to, I mean, I consider that, Carl, to be one of the best examples of how we as the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers can indeed supplement local and state resources. And as you pointed out, there was a significant local presence there, you know, by obviously the local parish officials, and to some degree, I believe the Department of Public Works was involved there as
Absolutely. The governor sent some National Guard groups in to help with the tie-ins with the Gabion basket. So,
and then finally, we as the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers came in with our contracting capability and our engineering expertise and plugged and played into the overall response picture and provided an effective solution.
Oh, absolutely. A matter of 4 or 5 days start to finish.
Wow.
So we like I say, that's my go-to example for cooperatively working together.
All right, guys. Well, what else did I miss about PL-8499 that you think is important for people to know?
Nadia, I think one important objective that we have before us is currently the revision of the Engineering Regulation 500-1-1 that Carl mentioned. So we identified that the current version of the regulation, again, that implements Public Law 8499 is approaching its shelf life. For example, it was last updated in 2001. So beginning approximately 4 years ago, a team was assembled to revisit the engineering regulation and determine, do we need to update this policy? And the team determined that there were significant changes required of the policy. So one of the milestones will actually be publishing the engineering regulation 500-1-1 this year or potentially next year, which will reflect some of the current changes.
One of the biggest changes that I see coming with the newer version of the ER is in hazard mitigation. Currently, our documented response for hazard mitigation is to participate in a FEMA mitigation team. In the new ER that is going through the formal rulemaking process, we're documenting the fact that we're actually taking a more proactive, more involved, more outreaching approach to mitigation, trying to solve some of the problems in advance of the flood so that when the flood comes, it is a much smaller issue, more easily managed, less damaging. I think we will see very positive results from this change.
Yeah, and I believe in essence that the team quickly realized significant changes to the rehabilitation program were needed to synchronize the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers' strategic direction and evolving policies in the field of flood risk management. So the updated policy will also encourage and facilitate a collaborative approach to address complex natural resource issues, tribal treaty rights, and complex system deficiencies. And upon implementation of the updated policy, USAISH will change from the role of compliance inspector to a provider of risk advice and technical assistance.
Okay, and this policy is going to be published either this year or 2017.
That is correct.
Fiscal year or calendar year?
We're looking at the calendar year of 2017.
Okay, great.
So we're looking for final publishing of the revised Engineering Regulation 500-1-1 by the end of calendar year 2017.
Great. Well, thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it. Carl and Willem, thanks for being here. And hopefully everybody has learned just a little bit more about PL-8499.
Pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
That's all we have for today's episode. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you've learned something. Please subscribe to our feed and check back for future episodes. I'm Nadia Taylor, and this is Semper Gumby.